Murder Mysteries and a Feminist Detective in the Contemporary South, next on Soundings. This is Wayne Pond at the National Humanities Center. Join me now for Readings and Conversation featuring writer Margaret Marin. We'll talk about two of her recent novels, Bootlegger's Daughter and Southern Discomfort.
In addition to my usual academic and career achievements, I was described as the only daughter of Keziah Knott, at one time alleged to be North Carolina's largest bootlegger. One or two hinted that I was, till now anyhow, the only white sheep of an infamous family, while others picked up on those phony campaign flyers and left the impression that Michael's murder had something to do with my position on sex, race, drugs, untaxed whiskey, and God knows what else.
Mystery writer Margaret Marin. She'll be back in just a moment to talk about two of her books, Bootlegger's Daughter and Southern Discomfort. Soundings is made possible by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, with additional funding from Carolina Power and Light, where listening generates powerful ideas. Deborah Knott is a daughter of the modern South, a North Carolinian, an attorney, a district court judge, and a feminist. She also solves murder mysteries. Deborah Knott appears in two recent books, Bootlegger's Daughter and Southern Discomfort. She's the creation of writer Margaret Marin, who presents us not only with murder mysteries, but portraits of the South and how Southerners are responding to changing patterns of politics, religion, and culture in American society. Bootlegger's Daughter won both the Edgar Allan Poe Award and the Agatha Award, respectively the Oscar and the Pulitzer Prize of the mystery world. When I invited Margaret Marin to participate on Soundings, she told me that as a youngster she loved the poetry of Edna St. Vincent Millay. So I asked her to read from Millay's work and explain how it helped to inspire her own writing of mystery novels set in the contemporary South.
I will put chaos into 14 lines and keep him there, and let him thence escape if he be lucky. Let him twist and ape, flood, fire, and demon. His adroit designs will strain to nothing in the strict confines of this sweet order, where, in pious rape, I hold his essence and amorphous shape, till he with order mingles and combines. Past are the hours, the years of our duress, his arrogance, our awful servitude. I have him. He is nothing more nor less than something simple, not yet understood. I shall not even force him to confess or answer. I will only make him good.
Margaret Marin, welcome to the National Humanities Center. I love your books. I'll confess that right here at the outset. We begin with a kind of an odd starting point here. You just read to me from Edna St. Vincent Millay. What in the world does that have to do with writing mystery novels?
I think it has a lot to do with it. When I first realized as a child of 11 that writing was an option for somebody who was out there in the tobacco fields of Johnston County, I was about 11 and I had read Edna Millay's Renaissance. And I knew that she'd published it when she was 19. And I thought, well, you know, she was 19, I'm 11, I have 8 years, I can do this. And of course, I discovered that I couldn't do that.
Uh-huh.
But I did very much, when I began writing, want to write poetry, and the sort of poetry that Edna Millay wrote, the structured poetry, not free verse. I really wanted to do sonnets and all the formal type of verses. And when I discovered that I could not be a great poet and was not content to write bad poetry, I then started trying to find my voice. And I had always enjoyed reading mysteries, rather. And that seemed a natural place to go. And it's not as far-fetched as you might think, because the construction of a sonnet, the formal structure of it, is very much the way you construct a mystery. I'm convinced that most poets probably begin a sonnet with the concluding couplet. And then they go back and they make the whole poem come logically down to that point.
Well, let me stop you for a moment. I mean, what occurs to me listening to you, Margaret, reflect on the sonnet. I mean, given the topic mm-hmm. that you've just read about here, chaos.
Yes.
That's what detectives do. They move backward in time and they reconstruct what happens and they yeah. finally come to a conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the right track there?
Absolutely. When I was a child, I used to love to take a ball of string and deliberately tangle it
right.
for the sheer pleasure of untangling it and putting it back. In other words, I created my random chaos.
Right, right.
And then had the fun of trying to restore order to this one little bit, this one little ball of string.
Well, I told you before our taping session that we have a trustee at the National Humanities Center who is an English professor who says that, let me get this right, that the detective stories of Edgar Allan Poe are the first manifestation of all this fancy talk about deconstruction in American literature. Again, you're moving backward in time mm-hmm. and putting events together and coming up with what appears to be a logical conclusion.
Yes, you want it to all appear as if it were absolutely inevitable
uh-huh.
that it moves to this conclusion. And the only way you can do that is by starting at the end and working backwards.
Well, let's talk about Deborah Knott. Let's talk about some of
okay.
your fiction here. The two books that I've just been through, Southern Discomfort and Bootlegger's Daughter. I got those in reverse order. Bootlegger's
mm-hmm.
Daughter was the first one published.
Yes.
Who is Deborah? How did you invent her? Are you Deborah Knott, for example?
I suppose there are elements of me in Deborah. I would certainly hope so, because I like a lot about her. She's also a lot of my friends and a lot of my friends' daughters. I wanted to see what you have to understand is I had another series set in New York City.
Uh-huh.
And in that, I had a very uptight police lieutenant named Sigrid Harold.
Sigrid.
And I had gotten her to a point that I could leave her for a while, and I did want to come home with my writing.
Back to North Carolina.
Yes, very much so. And so I needed a totally different voice, and I decided that I would make her more comfortable in her skin than Sigrid had ever been in hers. I would make her a judge, because she does want to run things. She does think she knows how things ought to be done. And she just grew out of that.
Uh-huh. Now, I want you to read to me a passage here from Bootlegger's Daughter. This is a paragraph that sort of encapsulates who Deborah is and why she's called the Bootlegger's Daughter. Will you read this for me?
Sure. In addition to my usual academic and career achievements, I was described as the only daughter of Keziah Knott, at one time alleged to be North Carolina's largest bootlegger. One or two hinted that I was, till now anyhow, the only white sheep of an infamous family, while others picked up on those phony campaign flyers and left the impression that Michael's murder had something to do with my position on sex, race, drugs, untaxed whiskey, and God knows what else.
Margaret, we've just heard you read from Bootlegger's Daughter. Who is Kezi Knott?
Well, he is the bootlegger.
Mm-hmm.
He has been married twice. Deborah is the youngest child of his second marriage. And she's also the youngest child in a very large family of brothers. In fact, I'm not quite sure exactly how many brothers she has. I think at least 11 or 12.
Let me tell you, reading these books, I started to keep a genealogical chart, and then I said, I'm just going to go with the flow and just enjoy these characters as they come along.
Absolutely. I have had some criticism. People say, well, you know, you're cast of thousands. But this is what the South is. They care about family. I have had people from outside the area think that Southerners are snobbish because they always ask who your people are.
Right. What county do you come from?
Yes, that too. But it's not a matter of snobbishness so much as a sense of trying to connect. And relationships stitch you into the community and they make you familiar and they put you in. My grandfather, for instance, died in 1954. And there are still people to whom I can say I was Claude Stevenson's granddaughter, and this will mean something.
Now, Stevenson is the middle name of Deborah Knott, your detective character. Let's talk a little bit about Deborah. She is a Southerner. She's a woman, obviously. She's a feminist. She is very much a part of what we used to call, what the scholars call the Old South, and yet she clearly represents many transitions into what we call the New South.
But she's not necessarily the old cultured South, the big landholders and the slave owners, any of that. No, Deborah's people are the yeoman stock of North Carolina. Her father was a bootlegger. He was. I mean, this is how he earned a living for his family. He became the head of the family when he was about 14 or 15. His father was also a bootlegger and had the tires shot out from under his car and went into Possum Creek, and that was the end of his father. And he became the head of the household and the bread earner at about the age of 14 or 15.
Now, you set these books in a place called Dobbs, North Carolina, Colleton County. Cedar Grove, help me with that name?
Cotton Grove.
Cotton Grove. Mm-hmm. All of this fictional landscape would lie just east of Raleigh in what we call the Triangle, Raleigh, Durham, and Chapel Hill. You have a wicked sense of humor, and you have a lot of fun evoking this sense of the land here in central North Carolina. I want to push you on this. Is this you? I mean, how do you work the interplay between your imagination and your own experience?
Well, that's what it means to be a writer. You do use everything. You recycle endlessly.
Right.
And you store things up in your head. I mean, I had carried that memory of corn growing in my mind. It actually happened when I was a child that we went out and we heard corn growing in the middle of the night.
Well, now, we haven't heard you read that yet. Let's pause on this and read this passage to me. This is from, let's see, which of the two books?
This is from Southern Discomfort.
This is from Southern Discomfort, and here we have Deborah out in the field.
On a moonlight night with her father walking through the fields.
And she's remembering a memory from her own childhood.
Yes.
All right, let's hear this.
Mostly we had walked in silence, enjoying a communion that needed few words. Now, as we started up the gentle rise, I remembered a warm May night back when this field was planted in corn. Daddy and I and Mother and the little twins had been out walking in the moonlight, much like this. It had rained all night the night before, a long, much-needed soaking rain, and the sun had shone all afternoon. As we stood at the edge of the field, Daddy suddenly hushed us. "Listen," he had said. Crickets and cicadas stridulated all around us, and a soft breeze rustled the green plants, but that wasn't what he meant. We strained our ears, and there beneath the crickets came faint creaks like the opening and closing of a thousand tiny rusty hinges. "What is it?" we whispered. "Corn's growing," Daddy said. "Hear it? Drinking up water with its roots and stretching up its stalks. It'll be 6 inches taller tomorrow." "Do you remember a night?" I ask him now. "What night was that, Shug?" "The night we heard the corn growing." He smiled but kept walking. "That was a pretty sound, wasn't it?"
This is Soundings, a weekly magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. My guest this week is writer Margaret Maron. We're talking about two of her books, Bootlegger's Daughter and Southern Discomfort. Margaret Maron is a past president of Sisters in Crime. Last April, she won both the Edgar Allan Poe Award and the Agatha Award, respectively the Oscar and the Pulitzer Prize of the Mystery World. I asked Margaret Maron to reflect on the task of writing mystery novels that portray social and cultural change in the American South today.
I really wanted to write about the South that I knew, not the stereotypes, not the cliches, not the funny, you know, Dukes of Hazzard type
thing,
but also not necessarily the storm and drung of Faulkner either. I just wanted to portray the South as it is. As I found it. Now, we've always had homosexuality and incest and rape. We just haven't talked about it.
Is this the South that you want the South to be? The way you project the... Again,
well, Deborah
Knott is a judge. She's an attorney. Mm-hmm. And she's kind of refashioning the South.
Well, it's not what I want. It's what it is.
Uh-huh. Fair enough.
I mean... I'm not real happy about all the new housing developments that are growing up around my particular little part of Colleton County. But there's not a thing I can do about it. People have to live somewhere, and if North Raleigh's become too expensive, then it's going to be South Raleigh.
I want you to read another passage from your books, Margaret Maron. Here again, this is a passage about the land, and this is a passage from Bootlegger's Daughter.
Yes. There's something innately soothing about walking slowly up and down rows of growing plants, your mind drifting across consciousness like a cloud across the blue sky overhead, only your eyes alert to leaf-green flint or white quartz arrowheads. A front had passed through during the night, and the air was cool and dry. The tobacco was just high enough that whenever I lifted my eyes from the dirt, I was an island in the middle of a fresh green lake that rippled in the soft June breeze. Yet I was not alone. 100 eyes watched my passage up and down the long rows. Grasshoppers fled before me, lizards skittered, a toad sat passive and immobile. In the next furrow over, a young snake with rusty blotches gave me a turn until the shape of the head and patterns along its length let me see that it was a harmless corn snake and not a poisonous copperhead. I'm not afraid of any snake once I know it's there. Yet, like Emily Dickinson, I never come across one unexpectedly without that involuntary tighter breathing and zero at the bone. Desmond Morris says that's because we're descended from apes, and snakes were the only natural predator that could follow us up into the trees. The Bible says it's because we're descended from Eve and lost Eden through the serpent's guile. Upon thy belly shalt thou go, and dust shalt thou eat all the days of thy life. And I will put enmity between thee and the woman. Poor snakes.
Margaret, you've just read to us here from Bootlegger's Daughter, and the character here, again, is Deborah Knott. She's a pretty fearless lady. Is this feminism? Is that what we should call
it? Part of it's feminism. Part of it is that she grew up on a working farm, again, with roughneck brothers.
Uh-huh.
And you don't grow up around brothers without having them chase you with snakes and push you off the end of the swimming pool and... You just have to adapt to an awful lot of things. Brothers will also teach you how to drive. They will put you on a tractor. They'll put you on the back of a mule if they get a chance.
What about the fact that Deborah is such a gifted storyteller? Now, that's part of what it means to be a Southerner, at least in the eyes of many people who are not
mm-hmm.
Southerners. You're
mm-hmm.
always telling stories. Is that kind of an inherent quality?
I really don't know. I would love to speculate about that. And a lot of people do speculate about why Southerners are great storytellers. I mean, I could tell you about, I am married to a Yankee. And when we were first married, this was very hard on him. Because I would come home from having gone to the grocery store in the car or something. And I'd come home and I'd say something like, oh, you won't believe what almost happened. I came across across Clarendon Road, and I didn't stop for the stop sign. I missed the stop sign, and he would stop me in mid-sentence. I'm getting ready to shape this wonderful, exciting tale, which really nothing terribly exciting happened. And all he wants to know is, was there blood? Were we going to be sued? Will an insurance claim be filed? And I think part of it comes from... It might be manners. It might be the culture that we have this thing of you have an obligation to amuse and entertain
uh-huh.
and to charm.
Well,
I mean, Southerners do think of themselves as charming. And I think part of that is the telling of the stories. But I sometimes wonder if it doesn't go back further. I wonder if it does have anything to do with the Civil War.
Uh-huh. In
the
other
fact
words,
that
the
this
is the Ancient Mariner thing. You know,
mm-hmm.
We're telling ourselves this story over and over again.
We were a conquered nation.
Yeah.
And defeat rankles. So you have to rationalize and justify and eventually mythologize. Whereas if you are the conqueror, you can be magnanimous in victory and you can go on and get on with your life.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't affect you as much. I think we found this after the end of the Second World War. We could be very magnanimous to our enemies because we won.
Margaret, let me stop you for a moment, and I'm going to ask you to read one more time here a passage from Bootlegger's Daughter. This is the voice of Deborah Knott. She is a storyteller.
Yes.
She's also telling us about how she operates in the modern South. She's going to talk to us about how the South is becoming new. She's going to talk about I-95. Read this for me.
Okay. I-95 passes straight through the middle of Colleton County, North Carolina, linking Miami to New York. I've never actually looked into the wording of the billboard law that regulates signs along a federally funded highway, but it's lax enough that farmers here can rent their roadside land to advertise the location of factory outlets that sell towels and sheets, name brand clothing, and of course, cheap cigarettes. Despite the tourist dollars, our stretch of I-95 would be a no-exit tunnel if Harrison Hobart had his druthers. And the judge normally throws the book at any Yankees who stray off the interstate and into his court. Fortunately, it was only a week till the May primary, so Czarnecki, who was boogieing on back up to Teaneck, New Jersey, got lucky. His outlandish hair, his satanic earring, his smart-ass sweatshirt afforded so many opportunities to zing me that Hobart finally let the kid off with a 90-day suspended and a $250 fine. Did I mention that Harrison Hobart's seat is up for election? Or that I'm one of the candidates?
Margaret, you just read to us here in the voice of your character, Deborah Knott. No, you didn't tell us that that she is one of the candidates. What's going on here? You're setting us up, are you not?
Of course. In this first book, Bootlegger's Daughter, she does decide to run for judge. And the time is right for her now. She knows that it's a good old boy system, but she thinks that she can just get a little foothold into it.
Now, how does she pull this off? I mean, on the one hand, she is a daughter of the South. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, she's very much the modern feminist, with her own agenda, her own set of ideas. Tell me about that interplay.
But she works within the system. I mean, yes, she's a feminist, but she's not an in-your-face feminist.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she is a pragmatist. In fact, all through the books, I have these warring voices of the pragmatist and the preacher.
I'm glad you mentioned this.
The preacher tells her to do right, and the pragmatist says, well, let's do right if it'll also do us good.
Uh-huh. They sort of sit on her shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
They sit in the back of her mind.
In the back of her head,
and they have these wonderful little debates about should she take this step, should she not take that step.
The preacher is more the old South, and the pragmatist is the new.
How do you invent the bad guys in these books? Again, we're talking about Southern Discomfort and Bootlegger's Daughter. You got some pretty villainous characters. Where did they come from?
Well, don't you think that everybody's capable of black and white?
Well, does this mean that you're a good Southern Baptist, that you believe that we all live in a fallen world and there really are bad people out there?
Well, they talk about the infinite perfectibility of man. There's also the infinite imperfectibility, I suppose you could call it.
Well, Deborah's a good Southern Democrat. She does believe in progress. She does believe that people can make the right choices and move in the right direction.
As long as they're Democratic choices, yes. I'm afraid Deborah's pretty much a yellow dog Democrat all the way. She does know some good Republicans, but, you know, they aren't necessarily her first choice.
Margaret, let's move toward a conclusion of our conversation. You feel good about being a Southerner? You optimistic about the future of the South?
Yes, I am. I think that we have a lot going for us that other areas do not have. I think there is an ease between the races, between different cultures, and maybe it does come out of the fact that we do have the space here, that we still do have one foot in an agrarian community.
Uh-huh.
But as far as the mystery itself goes, I really do think that I can say anything that I want within this convention.
You're talking about the genre of mystery writing and the way you marry that to being a Southerner.
Because I think that it is a well-constructed novel is going to stay a well-constructed novel, no matter what the genre is.
Well, here we come back to our starting point. That is making chaos something that makes sense, organizing it.
Yes, I will put chaos into 14 lines.
Uh-huh. Do you think of your writing as a form of poetry? Footnote to our conversation. One of the reviews of your books begins with the line, "With the skill of a poet," and you took that as a high compliment.
I did, because again, it goes back to where I originally came into the whole field of literature through poetry, and it does pleasure me to think that in some way I'm still there.
Very quickly, a footnote to a footnote, what is Deborah going to be up to in the next book? What further adventures can we expect from the bootlegger's daughter?
Well, the nice thing about making her a judge is that she can travel all across North Carolina. She can go and substitute anywhere for a sick or a vacationing judge. And the next book is going to be called Shooting at Loons.
Shooting at Loons.
And it will take place down in Beaufort.
Down in Beaufort, North Carolina. Yes. Not Beaufort, South Carolina.
No. Beaufort and Harker's Island.
Margaret Marin, I want to thank you very much for coming by and talking on Soundings here about your character, Deborah Knott, and your two novels. Let's mention them again. The first one is Bootlegger's Daughter. The second one is Southern Discomfort. That was published in 93. Margaret, I admire your work, and I wish you well as you continue with Deborah Knott.
Thank you very much.
This is Soundings, a magazine of ideas and insights from the National Humanities Center. I'm Wayne Pond. In just a moment, I'll tell you where to write if you'd like a cassette tape of this week's show. You've been listening to Readings and Conversation featuring writer Margaret Marin. We talked about two of her recent books, Bootlegger's Daughter and Southern Discomfort. Send $5 for a cassette tape of this program or $2 for a Soundings catalog. Please write to the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code is 27709. This week, the program number is 678. That's number 678. The address again, the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. The zip code 27709. Next week, Academic Martyrs and Sexual Conduct in the American Military. Two scholars with controversial views of those topics will be here to discuss recent pieces that they've written. Join me for conversations with literary critic Stanley Fish and theologian Stanley Hauerwas, both scholars at Duke University. Soundings is made possible by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, with additional funding from Carolina Power and Lights, where listening generates powerful ideas. Thanks for listening to Soundings. Until next week at this time on this radio station, this is Wayne Pond. Soundings is a cultural affairs service of the National Humanities Center.